Welcome to Bite-Sized Dental Marketing. Today I have Shannon Snell. Shannon, thanks so much for jumping on the podcast with me. Andre has said such great things about your coaching and around what you're bringing to your clients. And, you know, I just love getting to know you on the pre-show. And as we jump in, I would love to hear the origin story. How did you get started in dental? How did we end up here on the podcast together?
Well, thanks for having me. Andre has been nothing but spectacular.
He's amazing. I say that I got lucky. I married my wife and then I married Andre in business and I'm two for two. I'm doing great. But he's amazing. He's the best partner I could ask for.
He's amazing. And the honesty that you get right off the bat. So I reached out on behalf of my businesses because I'm looking, you know, for some marketing help. And long story short, he, instead of wasting my time and going through all of these things, he's like, right off the bat, we work with dentists and we do a good job. And we are fabulous in that. But I just fear that if we embark down a lane, right, because we deal with this all the time when we own businesses, if we embark down a lane that we're not familiar with, that we're not going to deliver what we want for you. And so I had so much respect for him right off the bat. And he's like, but from a friend to a friend, which mind you, we just met each other, right? He's like, I'll give you any tips on your website, or if you have any questions, feel free to reach out. And this was after a very long process of interviewing a lot of different marketing groups. And, you know, from a consulting standpoint, so I own a consulting company and I also own a permanent placement recruiting company, all that work with private practice dental offices. And I kind of came to the conclusion that whatever marketing company that we work with, I want to refer over our clients because we're going to have a great experience, right? But then I quickly learned that, you know, if your customer base is dentists, it might not swing over to be a consultant. But nonetheless, I mean, he's helped me, given me pointers, like if I get proposals from somebody else, he'll be a listening ear for it. And we've sent a lot of clients over his way. And I think it speaks volumes because, he's just been great. What you need when you are looking for some marketing help is the honesty behind it and what you actually need. So, because it can be a completely black hole, as you hear probably from your clients, so confusing.
It is. We want to do right in taking any account on. And it's true. It's to be an effective marketer, you have to understand not just the business, but the audience, but then it also has to align with the philosophy of the practice. And that's a high bar when you get into coaching and other businesses, because like you are the product and it can be a challenging, daunting prospect. But how did you go from young Shannon to starting her own, the consulting business, things like that? What was your journey in through dentistry there?
Yeah. So I graduated from the U of M School of Dentistry with dental hygiene degree. So I graduated and I went into private practice. And for some reason back then, I don't know what came of it. And, you know, looking back, I understand why this all happened. But I never wanted to be in a practice 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. I felt anxious about it for whatever reason. I didn't know it at the time. And I'm like, I just want to meet as many doctors as I can. I remember walking what we have in Minnesota as the Star of the North Dental Convention, a lot smaller than like the Chicago Midwinter or some of the other ones, but that's our dental convention nonetheless. And I remember walking around and looking at everybody, all the vendors and the professionals. And it's like, how did you get to where you are? You all help these, you know, private practice dental offices. It was just very interesting to me. So I worked as a temporary dental hygienist in over 45 different practices, which really started to spark my interest in the business side of dentistry. Because I could be at a practice in a city one day on a Monday. Everybody hates life. The patients are upset and nothing's working correctly. There's tension in the practice, right? And we're all here to serve and deliver awesome care to patients, right? That's our why in dentistry. And then the next day I could be at a practice down the street in the same city and they're thriving. Everybody's happy, probably financially a lot better for whatever reason. And I sat back and I'm like, well, wait a second. Both of these practices are trying to achieve the same thing. What's missing? What's missing? Is it the systems? Is it the leadership? And so I started to get a really big interest in the business side of dentistry. I was an awesome clinician, provider, high producing dental hygienist, but I just wanted something more. So I started to write out almost like standard operating procedures for when they had a temp in the practice. Like you have to have systems down, right? Fast forward to the staffing agency I was working for at the time, I proposed like 1 year out of school to buy into that. And so I purchased half of the staffing company and we grew from, I don't know, it was a startup of like 20 practices when I first started, and we grew up to over 100 in over 9 months just by marketing, right? I started to learn about the whole marketing side. And then I thought to myself, well, I'm just going to go get my MBA. I don't have to get my MBA for any boss or to show anybody. I just want to get it for fun. So I'm like, but I'm not going to go back to the dental school because I've already done that, right? They probably have a great program, but I want to go somewhere different. So I went to, it's called Hamline University, and I had a lot of great colleagues in my cohort, high up individuals at, you know, Medtronic and CPAs and finance and all of these different backgrounds. And so it was really fun to learn business from all of these individuals and then later on apply it to dentistry. So I ended up writing my thesis on, I think back then it was like technology integration within the dental practice. I was a little dental hygienist using Excel for the first time in a graduate level finance class. And it was challenging, but I got my MBA at the end of the day, again, just because I wanted it. I had owned a company at the time. And when I did that, I was temping for an office on Fridays and the doctors came up to me. They had just purchased a practice and they said, Shannon, are you interested in managing our practice? Our practice manager is transitioning out from the old doctor. And I said, absolutely not. In a very nice way, because again, I felt like I would just be confined to this office. I wouldn't know anything else. I did not want to be a practice manager, mm-hmm. but after multiple conversations with these doctors and they said, I know you own your own business. We can work something out. We just need somebody. So I said, yes, as long as everything could align with my schedule. And I ended up going from the chair and seeing patients to managing, I think at the time it was, you know, a little over $5 million. That was a long time ago, with just bread and butter dentistry, two doctor practice, over 30 employees. So I went from the chair to managing all of that payroll, 401k. What did everybody do at the front office? You had five individuals up there. And prior to me being a practice manager, I had no clue what they did. So I sat down and I learned each of their roles. How do you submit insurance claim? How do you follow up on things? What should your collections be? Then I started meeting with the accountant on behalf of the practice. And, you know, you learn, and I learned through that process how a practice actually functions from a 30,000 foot overview and what is needed to hold the glue together. So I did, you know, it was a great experience. I was there for about 6 years, and that was just the amount, you know, the right amount of time. And at the tail end of my career in that position, I started coaching and consulting because I'm like, okay, I've implemented things at this practice, right? Leading team meetings, looking at numbers. I can replicate that at other practices. So I joined a consulting group in Minneapolis and we traveled around, and a big part of what we did was implement office-wide bonus systems. Another one was clinical coaching. And so I did that for a couple of years and I thought to myself, well, wait a second. I already own a business. I'm working for somebody else's business. I can start my own consulting business. Mm-hmm. You know, the difference is that he was writing a contract and right. And so, but I was producing all my own material. Like it was the best time of my life. Very scary time, right? When you start off coaching and consulting, you feel like you need to know the answer to every single question, right? You have
a lot of pressure.
Expert. There's a lot of pressure. But yeah. And then I started my own consulting company. Fast forward to today. So I do own two businesses. The consulting company has five coaches on our team that all specialize in different areas. So high level of what we do. Front office systems, figuring out who does what and at what interval, right? Identifying those role descriptions for them. We work a lot with clinical profitability and dental hygiene because there's a lot of things within a practice. If you don't know outside the walls of what you're doing, all of the opportunity that you're leaving on the table. So it's nothing for us to do a practice analysis. And from three procedures, they're leaving, you know, anywhere from $30,000 to $65,000 a month on the table. And they just don't know what they don't know. So we do a lot with the clinical profitability of hygiene. We have an assistant on our team that works with the dynamic of a dentist and an assistant. And then we also work a lot in the transition space, meaning that if a doctor is going to purchase a practice, we help them with the credentialing aspect of it.
Gotcha.
All of the new things that come with private practice ownership. We also work in the opposite way, where we'll take an existing practice out of network, whether that's trimming out their landscape for their insurance or completely going fee for service. So we don't want to be all things to all people. I feel like I've said this for the last decade, but we're just so passionate about dentistry. It's such a great profession. It's so exciting that, you know, we try to help out in the areas that we can, but not Martin.
Not Martin. Now, when you think of the last 10 years in dentistry, what are the big shifts in the industry that you see, the top two or three shifts in that time frame?
Good question. I would say definitely the labor market and the ability to attract the type of team member that you want. So for example, when, you know, 10 years ago, when we would put out an ad, we would have 60 resumes and you would be tossing resumes in the trash if they had a typo on it, right? Like, you were very judgmental because you had a plethora of people to pick. Nowadays, it's like, can I help you write the resume so it just looks good? Like, can anybody? Like,
I need to show up.
Just show up, right?
Just show up.
I need a warm body in my practice right now. And so that has become challenging because it puts practices in a very unique situation. And sometimes they have to bend what their core values and their visions are. And that's always a sad day. But also the compensation piece too, that I know we're going to talk about a little bit and how to recover from that, because not only is, you know, just like when the labor market gets tight, compensation requests go up. And so that puts dentists in a hard spot.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you see profitability decreasing because of it, or do you see them? Let's dig into it right now. How are you balancing? Hygienists are making more than ever. Certainly your highest tier employees are making more than they've ever made. Do you see it impacting the profitability of the offices, or do you see offices adapting in other ways to make up those increased expenses?
You know, I feel like the schedules at offices are, they don't have an issue getting patients in. Everybody's schedule is quote unquote full. We want them to be productive, not full, but they're full, right? And I feel like the economy that they're in, they're doing more dentistry. And so sometimes the profitability might not be affected, but the dentist is overcompensating for the work that they're doing. Maybe they're getting into all on X cases, all of these high level procedures, and it's kind of shadowing what their hygiene department is doing. Now, the problem that we're facing right now is hygiene wages have gone up tremendously. And it's hard when you don't have a hygienist and you have to close down a whole schedule. It's not just the schedule, the doctor's schedule gets affected with that.
Right.
And so you, again, going back to the warm body example, it's like, can somebody come into my practice? And so we implement probably two of these a week. What we advise doctors do is switch to what we call a hygiene comp model. Now, sometimes when we think about a comp model or a bonus structure, which you'll never hear me call that, because when you start calling your hygiene comp model a bonus, then all of a sudden your front office wants a bonus, your dental assistant wants a bonus for something. It's just a comp model, and it's similar to what you would pay your associate doctor if they were to come in. Now, I was speaking at the Star of the North, and there was 100 doctors in the room, and we were talking about this, and I said, raise your hand if any of you would hire an associate doctor at an hourly rate with no regards to what they produce. Raise your hand. Forever and ever, amen. Nobody raised their hand. And I said, why do we do that with our hygienists? Where did this even come from? That you here, especially here in Minneapolis, 55, upper, you know, upper 50s is a reasonable compensation per hour. In exchange for that, you can't have a hygienist. There's no way you can survive by having a hygienist doing prophys all day and doing x-rays when they want, right? And not doing anything extra or going above and beyond. So that's where this comp model comes into play, because aside from the doctor, you have your largest producing group of your practice and you're paying them a flat hourly rate. What is the incentive to do more? Now, here's the kicker is I get sometimes is not everybody's motivated by money. And I get that. And there are doctors that will say, no, I'm not interested in that in my practice, because they, for whatever reason, they just don't want to. And that's okay. But it allows them to have some skin in the game. They're directly responsible, all of the hygienists are, for what comes out of their operatory in terms of production. They're directly responsible for the most part of what's in their schedule. And so when you look at a comp model, they will get, so how we structure it is they get their base pay. Whatever they're making right now, we're not going to change it, right? You have Sally in an office. Let's say she's making $50 an hour. You can keep that. But we're going to coach on perio programs. We're going to coach on imaging protocols, fluoride, all of this low-hanging fruit in the practice. And towards the end, we're going to say, you know, Sally, since you've done us such a great job adopting all these principles, we're going to reward you by putting you on a comp program. And you want your hygienist to have an adjusted production of 3 times their compensation. So if your fee for service, it's your gross production 3 times your compensation. But if you're an in-network provider, adjusted production of 3 times the compensation. And this is the reason why. One-third, let's say I'm working at a practice, 1/3 of what I produce goes back to me. So I have to pay for myself to be there. My wage, my benefits, all of that, right? The 2/3 of what I produce for a practice goes to their expenses. So these can be fixed expenses like their rent, capital equipment purchases, all of that.
Right.
Or variable, going up and down with suction tips, gauze, all of that, right? That's the 2/3 of my responsibility as a hygienist to produce. The last third is owner profit. And if I'm not, I can't tell you the number of practice analysis that we do that not only are they not profiting from the hygiene department, but they're actually taking money out of their own pocket to pay for that 2/3 because the hygienists aren't even covering the expenses. And so when you put it in this formula, it's very easy to say, put it in front of me and say, let's take all the feelings out of it, Shannon. You're not even producing enough to break even on that 1/3, 1/3, 1/3. You know, all emotions aside with that. Yeah.
As you were talking, I have two questions. Two from the doctor side and one from the hygienist side. From the doctor side, I want you to dig into what are the typical things you're hearing from dentists that don't want to implement this? Is it pride? Is it ego? Is it, and we just never done it before? And on the hygiene side, how are you combating, but I'm working really hard. What else do you want me to do? You know, in my industry, anytime we ask someone to do something new or different, you get some version of, but I'm working really hard, Eric. Kind of take me down those two questions.
Yeah, those are great. For the dentists that are hesitant, I'm going to be completely honest. I feel the majority of them aren't willing to listen to the latter half. So when I say comp model, they see red, absolutely not, because they think of
a cost center. There's more money.
Yeah. Like there's some DSOs around here that if your patient doesn't show up, you don't get paid, that kind of comp model. It's not like that. So sometimes they see red right away, not willing to listen. The other aspect is that sometimes they fear that it'll change the dynamic into more of a, instead of a collaborative team effort, more of an individualistic society in their practice in a bad way. They fear that they're going to start to become territorial over patients. And it's not going to be about serving, you know, our why that we show up to every day. It's going to be more about the money. And some people have really deep seated issues around money, which this could be a whole different podcast for, but they just feel like it's slimy. It's not good to talk about in morning huddle. And so you have those kinds of doctors too. So that's in my experience, once they learn that it's a win-win on all three parts, right? I'm working in a practice. I'm on a comp model. I can make as much money as I want, all within ethical reasons, right? I'm not going to take X-rays when it's not needed. I'm not going to do anything unethical. I am financially satisfied. The patient's healthier because of it. And I always say, if I see numbers for two hygienists I've never met them before in my life. If one has a higher production per visit than the other one, they're going to have healthier patients, hands down, all within ethical reasons, right? They're doing more services for that patient. They're going to have better treatment outcomes. The last thing is the doctors are satisfied, because once they hit that break-even point, they go to bed every night knowing that Shannon is paid what I'm supposed to be paid. Right. They're not having that awkward discussion every year like, oh gosh, looks like you're due for that 3% standard cost of living increase, you know, even though you're not producing, or, you know, it's just, you don't have to do that anymore, because the hygienists get a raise every time your fees go up. The hygienists get a raise every time your write-off percentage goes down. So it takes you out of that. And lastly, when you're hiring, you know, we work with this a lot, is you'll see a practice say you can make 45 to 52. And that's it. And we say, don't do a range. Always do starting at, because that end number is up for the stars, right? Like you can just imagine what you're going to make there. But if you're on a comp model, you can say starting at 70 an hour, and everybody's going to look at that and be like, wow, that's a lot of money. And not that you're trying to bait and switch somebody, but when you bring them in for an interview, say, gosh, it looks like you were at a pretty progressive practice. In my office, it looks like you're going to be a high producer, and this is the range of our high producers and what they make. And so it differentiates yourself from a recruiting aspect. And with your second question, with the hygienist saying, gosh, I'm already doing a lot, are the number one thing that causes hygienists to run behind and to be stressed is not coding out correctly. So in other words, they're having patients come in every 6 months and they're doing the prophy code, right? The least production, it's for patients that have impeccable oral hygiene. That's very taxing on your body. It's very stressful for the provider and for the patient. When you start to diagnose perio and treatment plan correctly, all of a sudden that patient goes from every 6 months to 4 times a year. Those appointments get a little bit more easy. And so it's, yes, you're working hard, but let's show you how to even decrease that more. Let's show you how to streamline time management within your operatory. So one of the things that we do is we time the hygienist. Part of our coaching is we go in and how long are they doing assessments for? How long are they scaling for? How long does the exam take? Nobody's ever done that before. So we always talk about what we feel happens, goes on in the appointment, but we don't really know because nobody's timed. And so when you have a hygienist physically scaling for 45 minutes, well, that's not an appropriate code for that patient.
When you think about how they spend their time, when you think about the perios and things like this, what are the key markers of profitability that you typically look for?
The three things that we look for dental hygiene profitability. So if you were switched to a comp model and you're sitting there like, oh, this is exciting. What can I do to maximize my time? So the first thing we look at is your production percentages. So these are all procedure percentages. Mm-hmm. What is your perio percent at? A lot of the things that you see in DI, you know, dental intelligence. What is your fluoride percentage at? How often are you taking bite wings, full mouth series? Are you utilizing the CBCT code? We look at all of that and we measure it consistently, because what gets measured gets improved. And so when you start doing that on an individual level, their production will go up and their procedure percentages will go up. So same thing when you said, you know, I feel like I'm working really hard. Well, when you say that and your perio is a fourth of what you should be doing, that's what tells us the real story, not what you feel like you're doing, right?
The truth is they are working hard, just not on the right things.
Yes. Or they're just doing a lot of what we call undercover perio. So they're really getting in there and doing it. They're just not coding out correctly because they feel bad for the patients, because all of us hygienists are very caring people, right? The second part, right? If I'm put on a comp model and I'm like, oh, I'm going to go get this, right? Is your time that you're spending with each patient. So we always say 60 minutes for a prophy or a perio maintenance or even a gingivitis code. And that being said, if the patient's coming in more often, it should be feasible for you to do that in 60 minutes. Now, there's, you know, exceptions to the rule if there's a patient with high needs, needs wheelchair transfers, all of that. But for the most part, having a standard for what you're scheduling for. In practice, we have some practices that a hygienist will say, I have a full mouth series that I have to take. I'm going to add 10 minutes or I'm going to add, you know, just for fun, I'm going to add 20 minutes because I really like to talk to this patient about, you know, what happened on the voice last night or whatever, right? You have to be really efficient with your scheduling. And it's the Parkinson's law, right? The more time you have, the more time you'll fill, right? And so really honing in on what that looks like. The last, and blocking for what you need to block for. So you don't want to schedule from 8 to 5 just filled in with whoever. You want to set perio days with no exams. You want to block for those patients with higher levels of disease. And you want to structure your schedule on what your ideal week looks like, not just fill my schedule 8 to 5. That doesn't do you any good either. The last part is the non-productive time. So the third area, profitability, which is time that you're clocked in, but you don't have a patient. So we might have really high producing hygienists that might not earn as much on a comp model because they're pokey, for a lack of better terms, and staying super late doing their notes. Like they just can't get their notes in during the day, you know, for whatever reason. Or they're, my favorite is doing sterilization, right? That has nothing to do with the dental hygiene care going back and forth with the patient, but that's working against your comp model. And for the record, I'm not saying hygienists shouldn't do sterilization, but that could also be another conversation we could have, is what's your 20%, your zone of genius in your certain role? And that probably doesn't fall into it, right? Sitting there and wrapping instruments. Cancels and fails, that's going to be another one that's going to affect that third area of profitability. And I always say it's a tough pill to swallow, but cancels and failures especially happen because they didn't see the value in their chair
the
last time that they were in. It's very rarely a front office snafu. So we have to make sure that we are, you know, having the value and portraying the value and them coming in for the next visit. And so all of this plays a role into how successful you're going to be on a comp model.
Yeah, it's funny. You hit on one of the problems we have in marketing is everyone wants to challenge the cancellation at the point they're making. And I think you should, but that's not when that appointment got canceled. That appointment got canceled when it got made, is you know, establishing the value. Now, when you're really honed in and you have the compensation model in place, take me through the general path, I guess, of the I'm ready to implement this to I'm now firing on all cylinders. What is the typical timeline? What's the challenges you see in there? How do I go from I'm playing a flat hourly rate to this the dream comp that you're talking about?
Yeah. So the first thing that's really important is to model out what those numbers are going to look like. Mm-hmm. So if you're considering, you know, any practices considering putting a compensation model together, not just coming up with a formula between the doctors and saying, this looks good, and then implementing it and not really modeling out what the hygienists actually were going to make. What we always do is we take the last month's numbers, because in our mind, you've gone through the majority of the coaching, so that should be your most productive month ever.
Okay.
Right. So we look at that and we model out how much they would have made in that month. Sometimes it's not favorable. Like you really wouldn't have made anything because you weren't, there's all these things that we still have to work on. And that's not a bad thing either. We just have more to build on. There's others that are like, oh gosh, this is exciting because I see last month I would have made $4 extra, right? Especially in our fee-for-service offices. I mean, those hygienists can really, really rake it in financially, right? So we model it out, and then it's important to establish the rules behind it, right? The guidelines of it. You know, over the years that we've been implementing it, we've come up with, you know, there's always a question. It's like, oh gosh, we've never thought of that. But what do you do when the doctor's family comes in and it's a zero doubt appointment without production, but you're on this production model? What does that look like, right? There's no right or wrong answer. It's just what you feel like is right. You know, making sure that their walkouts are correct. So I just was on a call prior to this and I said, you know, it doesn't matter for you guys right now. It kind of does, but you have to make sure your walkouts are correct. So when I'm pulling your hygiene procedures and there's a bunch of exams in there and a few crowns, you have to make sure that the providers are correct, or else it's going to skew your production numbers when you go to a comp model. So if the team isn't organized in that aspect, that's something to clean up too. And then also setting parameters for, you know, if you're diagnosing periodontal disease, that should go in back into your schedule. There's no taking of patients and putting patients in other people's schedules because they're not productive, right? We come to an agreement on that. So then, you know, just laying out the rules and then showing them how it's calculated. Because if they have the understanding and they know what their goals are, then it's going to be easy for them to master.
Now, when you think about the shortage of hygienists and when you look at the labor market today, do you see a day where we go back to the flat hourly rates, or is this, because it feels to me from the outside in, when you look at the shortage of hygienists in the industry, when you look at all these other things, like this feels like a tide that's already moving, and you know, I don't see a way back to the traditional hourly hygienist time. Is that where you see it, or are the winds shifting back there? Because I think across the 115 offices we're working with, most of them have some form of shortage in staff, specifically in hygiene, right? Do you see it going back?
No, because I feel like regardless of the economy, regardless of the labor shortage, this should have been something that was implemented. Like, I always ask myself, who came up with this?
Doctors, the dentist did. Yeah.
Well, because they had it all.
Yeah, but there was an abundance. There was an abundance at one point. Which is gone. Yeah.
But I also feel like if you go way back in time to the hygienist being called a dental nurse or whatever they started out as, right?
No, really?
Their scope of practice, when they had the little nursing hats, right? You see those pictures with the skirts. Their scope of practice was like, let's get these teeth clean so we can plop a crown on. Kind of, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then
effectively,
And then it's morphed into a larger thing, a provider that should be held to the same standards as an associate with just a different scope and a different area of expertise. I mean, hygienists nowadays are teeing up cosmetic cases before their doctor even comes into the room. They're very knowledgeable about all of the adjuncts. We're diagnosing a lot of periodontal disease and using lasers in our practice. We have hygienists that are treatment planning Botox. I mean, they're deciding the units, they're reconstituting the Botox to the point where the dentist just comes in and injects. Now they have to approve the treatment plan and all of that too. But it's morphed into this very high level position, if you will, within the practice. And I think they should be compensated for that.
Yeah. And you see it in the nursing field, I think, is a bit ahead. It is cultural in that why dentists and the dental industry hasn't moved. And you know, nurses to nurse practitioners and physicians assistants have all had increases in the way they model out their compensation. And you're right, hygienists are doing more today than they've ever done. And it's largely just cultural reasons that the owners haven't adapted to a new compensation model. But with the increase in med spas and the aesthetics, and certainly the market shift that we've seen in labor has necessitated a need. I mean, I would say most of the fee-for-service practices we have and all of the very high-performing offices we have some form of non-normal compensation. I say non-normal. I don't mean that to be cute, but, you know, flat hourly rate for hygienists. But it sounds like what you're proposing is you know, lovely, because everybody wins, right? The right. Third for the hygienist, a third for the office, and a third for the doctor. I think that's the dream scenario. Yeah.
Yeah. And going back to your question of why are doctors hesitant, another comment I get, which is very interesting, is why would I implement this when they can go down the street and make just as much with zero expectations or more, right? They can go down the street, they can go to a different office and not have all of these expectations and get paid more. And my response to them, and we tell hygiene teams this all the time, is 100%. There are offices in this city that you can go to a new Profi's all day long, but I've worked in them and it's a very depressing place to be. And so it's depressing, right? The patients aren't being cared for. And if that fills your cup, probably not a good fit here anyways, right? And that doctor, I can guarantee you, is not financially stable, right? There's lots of things that go on behind the curtains. Yeah, you might get paid more and you might not have expectations, but wow, your license is on the line and your name's on that chart. So you have to think about that too.
And you're going to bounce around. And yeah, these are things that this has been as old as time as anyone. You know, Texas is a right to work state. You can leave at any point for any time. No one's out there leaving jobs every other month. Yes, there's some group that constantly leaves and they need to go find themselves. But the people who fit your culture, and I do believe as business owners, I find myself in sort of a paradoxical scenario. I believe as business owners, we're responsible for bettering the world we live in. So that includes, you know, the team we work with. So I want to be a great place to work. I also do believe in the Jack Welch philosophy of the contract between employee and employer is settled in payday. I don't owe anyone. They don't owe me anything. Loyalty is, you know, I think the culture we have and finding our tribe. And I'm with you. If you're going to leave over $2 or $3 to go down the street, you should go. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not for you. But if you want a good place where we're going to care about our patients, if this is how we're going to conduct ourselves and as a partner or as a manager, I'm going to come in and I'm going to be consistent and I'm going to treat you with respect. Like, I don't see, you know, typically bad leadership and culture drive way more people away in those offices than a couple of bucks do. I think that's an excuse to not implement change, truthfully, when I hear that from dentists.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah,
it's just an excuse. And it is scary as a business owner to start paying out. There's something emotional. And I think of our company when we first started, our first employees, they were 1099. We were kind of paying as we could afford them. And, you know, we've seen our average salary near double. And it is emotionally very scary to lay out, you know, that money and see it leave. But what is true is our profitability has increased, our top line revenues increased. And I think you nailed it of there's something around stepping back and looking at the goal, looking at the numbers and almost educating yourself on how it's going to fit into your business model and you're going to be okay. I mean, I there's a world where we can all win.
And, yeah. You know, yeah. And yeah, I mean, that's a great point. And the frustrating part sometimes in what we do is, especially on the recruiting side, is, you know, you have a doctor that posts an ad and you know, we'll say, you know, compensation needs to be up a little bit if they're not interested in the comp model. And they were like, well, I can't afford that. But on the same breath, they're not willing to capture, you know, we may have just done an analysis and showed them that they're leaving 60 grand on the table for just tweaking a few things. Mm-hmm, so it's very interesting to me that it's like, you don't want to make changes sometimes to provide that wiggle room for the compensation, but then you're frustrated that you don't have a hygienist. Or we had a client that was in a very good position to go fee for service. He didn't want to, he's in the driver's seat, right? But he could afford to pay his hygienist a lot more, but he chooses to be in network. I think that's another common thing that they're just nervous to transition out. In our practices that have an overcapacity issue, they have too many patients that they're able to serve, we also advise, you know, going out of network with insurance companies, whether it's just trimming that out or going fee for service. And then that provides a really good lump sum to distribute and compensate your hygienists accordingly.
I would love, I know we're coming up on time here, but I would love to do another episode on your approach of dealing with the capacity issues and getting folks out of the network, because that's such a fascinating topic right now. And it's something that I've seen done very well. And I've seen done, you know, moderately well. I've never seen it done just terribly, but I would love to have you back on the show and dig into, you know, getting out of that insurance-driven mindset and how to start working through these capacity issues, especially as it overlays into hygiene, because I think that hygiene is the lifeblood of the practice when it comes into the treatment presented and and things like this. I'd love to have you back and record another episode on insurance driven and fee for service.
Let's do it. That'd be fun.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me. And, you know, we'll link out to DCC Dental Consulting Company in the show notes. And Shannon, thank you so much for your time. I've learned so much. It's been so great. I love the compensation model for hygienists. I'm with you. It's the days of just here's an hourly rate, you know, go to town are long overdue to mm-hmm. update it.
Yeah. I agree. Well, thank you for having me, Eric. It was a lot of fun.